Welcome back to the Homeschool Conversation Podcast, where we talk all things homeschool. On today's episode, I have a very special interview with an unschooler whose name is Kate, and she has unschooled all of her children all the way into college. So you heard that right. She actually has a teenager who is in college. So I encourage you that if you've ever been skeptical about this method of unschooling, then just listen in and see for yourself.
How important is it then that we kind of do this boxed education that steers kids towards a higher university level education? And was it more important that we actually reach out and make these goals for our kids, for them to be self-reliant and self-sufficient and happy and well-adjusted, and we have a great family bond? And so we decided to go with our list and forget about school. And just about that time, my husband's mom was diagnosed with Lewy body dementia. So from 2006 until 2009, I was helping to take care of her and also expecting our fourth child, who was born in 2007. So then,
during that point, did you feel like a little bit concerned or scared or worried about, you know, because it can be a little scary to ditch what the world tells you is the only path to success. So did you feel like uncertain that you were choosing the right thing by kind of going with your goals instead of going with the world's goals, so to speak?
I would definitely say having the mentorship of our friend and actually having adult unschoolers part of our life helped calm all that down. But the first year when we did pull them all out and we're like, my mother-in-law passed away. And then I was like, okay, we're going to do this. And so we pulled them out. And the first year, you know, they'd been schooled for 4 years, the oldest one had. She was in fourth grade when we pulled her out. So was enough of that schooled mentality. Plus, you know, I'd been a teacher. I had a master's. There was a lot of unschooling, deschooling for me to do.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Some people think that, you know, if only I was a teacher, I could homeschool my kids. And I'm like, actually, I think a lot of teachers have a hard time in the beginning with homeschooling because they've learned that teaching happens in this, you know, in this studied method. And so that's an interesting, you know, perspective to hear that you were a teacher and you needed to deschool your own self.
I needed to deschool myself horribly so. so much so. So the first year, you know, we pulled them out, and after the first month of them just watching TV nonstop, because that's what they did, you know, they'd never had that opportunity to have unlimited media and all this stuff. I called my friend in tears and I'm like, my kids are never gonna learn all they're doing. And she's like, they are learning. And she assured me, she said, if you're really freaked out, give them all an assessment right now. You know, get some test paper, whatever, give them an assessment where you think they are. And she said, and then put it away and do absolutely, in your mind, do absolutely nothing with your kids for the next year. And then give them that same assessment. And so I thought, well, you know, I can do anything for a year. So I did, I gave them an assessment. They went back to watching TV. They watched TV for, I am not lying, 3 months solid. And then one day my oldest, my 9-year-old, got up, turned off the TV, looked at everyone and said, we need a media cleanse immediately.
Oh my goodness.
And it was funny, but they came to that realization on their own. And so they turned off the TV. They spent 2 weeks coming up with creative ideas. We also at that time, and I think this is really important for people who need to deschool, I had my friend as my mentor who I could reach out to, but my kids didn't really. And we had joined the Park Day, Dragon Tree Park Day, that Pam Sarushian, she's an amazing guru in the unschooling community, part of the HSC board at one time. She's since retired, but she had started this Park Day. And so we would go, and watching her kids and other teen and young adult unschoolers to serve as mentors for my own kids really helped them. Anytime I could with my kids, if they were, you know, the Kung Fu studio that we went to, the instructor there was from the unschooling method. Most of the parents who were there, many of the homeschooled kids there also were unschooling parents. And so we kind of surrounded ourselves with mentors and people who supported us in our idea. I wouldn't say my family was really happy with it. I come from a long line of teachers and lawyers. And to be honest, it wasn't until my oldest got accepted into UC Berkeley that my immediate family and our family kind of went, huh, I guess it works.
Wow. And that is a long time of having to handle and resist the,
yes,
the criticism and the unacceptance. And how did you push through that? I mean, that's a really long time. You're saying from the time your child was in fourth grade all the way until college, you,
yes,
didn't have the support of extended family.
No, not at all. But I had a lot of community support, and that was really important to us. In some ways, it makes me a bit sad. Over the years, my family would, you know, for Christmas gifts, give my kids curriculum sets.
Oh, no.
Which they were like, what do we do with this? And they understood that, you know, that was their belief. And, but it did do some damage with, I would absolutely say there was damage done my family's relationship with my kids for not being supportive of who they were and growing. But I think, you know, the reason why we chose this partially was because of our relationship with our children. And I've been involved in Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, the adventure guide programs, and I see a lot of schooled kids who struggle with their relationship with their parents. And, you know, that outweighs it. My family's relationship, because we didn't go the traditional path, was somewhat damaged, but my kids and our relationship, not using curriculum, not going that chosen path, has turned out to be a lot closer, which that relationship to me is a lot more valuable.
Yes, you have to pick one, unfortunately.
It was hard, but completely worth it. And
right.
I would do it again in a heartbeat.
And so now that you're on the other side of that battle, and you have a little bit more support from them, where are they with their support? Are they like, oh, I'm sorry, I was wrong? Or are they saying, oh, you know, you were right. I should have supported you all these years. Like, where are they now that they see she got into
One of my siblings, who's an attorney, she still kind of isn't sure it was the right choice.
Okay.
And feels like we were lucky that it worked out. And she's still looking at, you know, my youngest, who's 13, who's really only started reading a couple years ago. So she's kind of looking, going, I don't know that that's going to work out. My next sibling, who is a teacher, and actually her union rep at her school, has considered unschooling their kids when they were in high school, which basically the way she's interpreting that is, once they get to high school level, she'll let them start taking community college classes and kind of follow their path from there. So she's actually considering it. And then I have a younger brother who's an attorney who just had his first child, and they do plan to homeschool and unschool their kid. So my siblings have come a long way.
Oh, wow. That's a really long way. That's different. That's totally different thing. One, being supportive, and then two, taking that support to the next level, to saying that now they want to replicate what you're doing. That must be so validating for you on so many levels.
It is. I have wise kids who keep telling me, they're like, don't look to your family for validation.
So true. So true. Because
thank you, wise ones.
Yes, I know. The children are just always teaching us, right? Like, even not even just academic topics, but I just feel like the wise topics too, they like bring you back to center. So I mean, I know that there's so much to talk about with this. I probably should do another interview with you separately, but I just feel like I have so many questions.
I know, right?
So I guess we should back up a little bit. So the unschooling topic, just for people who don't even know what that means, and they think, they probably do think that it's just watching TV all day. What is it real? Is it really just that, just giving them the absence of structure and the absence of curriculum and the absence of plans? Or would you say it's not that, that there is actually more intentionality with it?
I would absolutely, and I think when I see the difference between unschooling versus unparenting, and you can have a kid who's in a brick and mortar school who is unparented and have the similar result. But to unschool, you really need to come at it with an intention that there is something on the other end, and trust. To trust your kids, to talk to your kids. You know, as they were watching TV, my friend's like, well, what are they watching? What is it that they're interested in? And it was, my kids were obsessed with the Australian TV show H2O. And so it was about mermaids. So we took a trip to Catalina and I made little swim fins for them so they could swim as mermaids. And while we were there, you know, we learned about the Garibaldis and we learned about the oceanography and we went over on a boat and I talked to the captain. I'm like, oh, can you show the kids? And the captain's like, yes, and showed them the different currents. And basically their one interest in H2O, by my paying attention to that, led them on a science adventure as well as a math adventure, not super deep, but enough that information was strewn in front of them as, hey, are you more interested in this? Would you like a follow-up learning about that? And then I looked at how they were interested and they were really interested in the fish. So we started going to the Aquarium of the Pacific more often. And, you know, one thing kind of snowballs into the next and your kids really end up learning. But it's done with intention, absolutely.
And so then do you also, like, as part of that intention, do you borrow some things from curriculum or do you totally shy away from it as being too structured as for an unschooler?
I think you need to look at your kids. And so for my kids, and also being part of the brick and mortar situation and filing a private school affidavit, I knew in my school district, as a private school, I had access to their curriculum lab. So when the kids were interested in mammals, I went to the curriculum lab and I, with my private school, checked out skeletons of foxes or birds, and I brought them home and had them in my house. So I use the primary resources rather than a boxed curriculum. However, so from that perspective, I didn't have curriculum ever. Instead, I looked at what my kids were interested, found the primary resource. And because to me, unschooling, one of the biggest elements is you have to teach your kids have to learn, like how to learn. Right. And one of the ways that you learn is primary resources, whether they come from a captain on a boat, to a laboratory where you can take an actual skeleton out. You know, worksheets are nything, but actually having a rattlesnake skeleton on your kitchen table for 3 months while you're obsessing over snakes.
Yeah, I mean, you don't ever forget that.
Right.
That's something that's been in your mind forever. I think that your example of the captain teaching them about like tides and just for oceanography, being on the ocean and that type of learning, I feel like it's that experiential learning. It just stains in your mind. Even if you think back to when you were in school, I mean, I don't remember any of the worksheets that I filled out, but I for sure remember the field trips. I remember the guest speakers. I remember like those things that were just so different than the normal everyday grind. You know, I feel like there's something so powerful about giving kids experiences over worksheets for learning. I so believe that.
Absolutely. And a lot of people might argue that it's expensive. And as a PSA, you do not get any funding from the state. But like I just brought up, there's so many resources out there, such as like the captain on the boat. That was a friend. We didn't pay for that boat trip. Going into the public school's curriculum lab, because my private school is in their school district, checking those things out, free. all of it free if you look for the resources. I was thinking about something. But you have to pay attention to your kid, because my third child, when she was in fifth grade, she started talking about how she wanted to go to school for middle school. And we kind of were like, okay, well, you know, what is it? Kind of like, what was missing in her life, or what did she feel like she needed that she could only get at a middle school? So we sat down and we talked to her, and basically in her mind, middle schools would be like, I think, a Disney show, quite honestly. So she wanted a locker.
Oh my
she God. Wanted
Who doesn't want a locker?
Yeah, she wanted a locker. She wanted to be a cheerleader. And she did want some more structure. So we're like, okay. So we actually got her a small locker for her bedroom that she could lock away her diary and journal in, and got used to the little turntables. She and one of her friends joined a cheerleading camp where she got that experience, and she decided she actually didn't have the diplomacy to be a cheerleader.
Oh, I love that.
But she tried it, and instead she joined gymnastics. And then the third thing about the structure, I said, okay, well, let's go to the teacher store. So we did, and I pulled out a lesson planning book. You know, I bought her a teacher's lesson planning book. We went home and I showed her how a teacher sets up curriculum. And so I laid out the teacher thing, and I taught her, what subjects do you want to learn? And she told me, so we checked out those books at the library. I showed her how to plan 3 months out as a teacher. You know, you got to plan the different days, what classes would be on which day. So I modeled, showed her, and then let her do it. And for 2 years, and she actually got one of her friends, also an unschooler, to do this as well, the two of them would plan out their learning.
Oh my goodness.
Teacher lesson plans.
And they're in what grade at this point?
They were, my daughter was in seventh and eighth grade when she did it, and her friend was in sixth and seventh grade when they did
what it. What a valuable life skill. I mean, forget whatever they learned.
It turned out she doesn't learn that way anymore, but she's become my bullet journal queen. Doing that in eighth grade to by ninth grade, and now she's going into her senior year in high school, and she's going into her fourth year of community college. She uses a bullet journal for all of her organizing.
Wow, that's such a valuable life skill that, you know, whatever the content is, I feel like the more important point is that she learned how to gather information and organize thoughts. And that's just something that even college level children who have gone through the public school system with structure, because they've been spoon-fed the data, it's like they don't know how to organize that data for themselves. So they struggle with studying and how to organize things, even in college, because they just never learned that skill. So I feel like that is such an important practice and learn.
Other kids, I taught them on a minor level. One of them uses Habitica to organize her things, which is an app on her phone, because she's a lot more computer-ish, and somebody had told her about Habitica. But when the question on like the structure or not structure or curriculum or not, I do look at my third child and the fact that she wanted more structure.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, that lends itself perfectly to like one of the questions that I had on my list for you, which is, do you think that unschooling could be right for everyone? Or do you think that it's a method that really only lends itself better to certain family dynamics or certain personality types? I mean, I feel like given some examples of how you can be flexible as an unschooler, it doesn't mean you hate all curriculum and hate all structure. You use it sparingly for when you need it, like you use it as a tool. But I'm just wondering if what you think about that, if you think unschooling can be right for everyone, if they use it in a way that works for their family.
I think this is a little bit of my own bias, and partly why I use the word unschooler when I'm out there, rather than self-directed or any of the other choices, but really it was self-directed. There are a lot of eclectic homeschoolers out there who approach certain things with an unschooling mind, but then still separate out other things, which goes back to my high school and the paideic approach, to cut out math or science and make it its own weird bubble doesn't really incorporate that paideic whole life learning experience together. My bias is I don't really like it when people call themselves unschoolers, except for blah, blah, blah. They're eclectic schoolers, which is awesome. And they have an unschooling approach to this and, you know, curriculum approach to that. Fantastic. I do think that unschooling can work for any family. And it isn't necessarily a personality, because I've seen a lot of different personalities and a lot of different structures. But I think the unifying thing of the families that I see it working for best is really listening and connecting to your kids and having that self-direction and that kind of consensual learning that goes on, where, you know, my child said, I want more structure. I'm like, great, let's find out how we can get you more structure. I didn't sit down and say, you know, here's a workbook, here's that. Instead, I really wanted to model to her how she can take ownership of that, you know, structure. Right. It wasn't me imposing.
Yeah, and I'm sure she was so much more. I'm sure she must have been so much more engaged in doing the lessons when she wanted it, that she actually sought it out.
She picked the lesson.
You didn't have to sit down and be like, it's school time, time to start school. You have to start your lesson. It's school time, time to sit at the table and start school. Like, I'm sure she was just way more self-motivated, which I feel like that intrinsic motivation is so difficult to get kids motivated to do something, you know, that's on your agenda. I feel like that can be so hard.
That's the key right there, that's on your agenda. It's really hard to get them. However, what I found, because I also work and I run a company, there are times when I have to go on a business trip, like next week I'll be gone, and then the following week I'll be gone for part of the week as well, where I turn the household over to my kids. And, you know, nobody's excited about laundry, nobody's excited about making dinner, nobody's excited about picking up the dog poop. But for all these years of respect of me, you know, oh, I see you're really involved in that video game right now. Did you get a chance to make your bed? And the kids would say, no, not yet. And I'm like, okay, well, today, since you're doing that and you look really, it looks really important to you, I'm going to make your bed. And they're like, thanks, Mom. And kind of establishing that respect for their interests, their passions, with the same level that I ask them to respect my work.
If I ever said that to my son, he'd probably faint. I mean, that is just an amazing, like, demonstration of respect, like really modeling what respect looks like. And that I give you a lot of respect for that one right there. Just, that's a wonderful example of, I see that that looks really important to you, so I'm going to make your bed for you. And I'm sure that, I wonder what goes on in the mind and heart of a child when they hear their parent delivering,
I think in what I've seen from the families I know who kind of live that dynamic, which is part of that unschooling thing, is you really have to live that dynamic of, no matter what they're doing, their experience and learning, you know, that three-year-old is learning an experience on the same deep level. It's different than us, but it's the same deep level as us being passionate about a writing thing that we're doing, or our company project we have to get done. It's their work, it's their passion, it's what they care about. And we as human beings on this planet, to honor that and respect that is important. I'm not saying, you know, I didn't make their beds every day. In our house, there's a big thing before we would go out to the parks or go anywhere, you know, dinner had to be made and prepped, beds had to be made. I had expectations, probably pretty high expectations, of what kids could do. As far as like cleaning or whatever around the house. And we would work together, go out, do our fun thing, and then come back home. But if they were really absorbed, and you can see when kids are really interested in something, it's like, oh, I see you're really interested, I will do this for you today. And they're like, thanks, Mom. And there's that mutual respect.
Yeah.
But now as an adult, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, I think it takes a lot of trust to believe that if you do that, if you make your bed, if you make the bed of a child, that, you know, most parents would say, well, then they're never going to learn how to make their bed. Or, you know, if you don't ever give them a curriculum, then they're never going to learn how to read. And I feel like there's a lot of fear amongst parents that if they don't do X, then their child won't do Y. And right. I feel like it's from a programmed sort of thinking that we've all been programmed to think that there's only one way to success. And any other path to success just seems, you know, like you're skeptical and they're scared. So I wonder, I guess my question to you now is, what advice would you give to parents who just feel like they're scared to let go of their way of thinking? How can they know for sure that they're doing the best for their children? Because I feel like ultimately that's what all parents are really at the heart of things. They just want the best. So how can you know for sure that you are actually teaching your children the right things? And, you know, how can you, what advice can you give them to help them let go of their own, this one way of thinking that I must make my child make their bed every day, otherwise they won't learn, or I must give them a reading program or they won't learn to read, and so on and so forth.
I think what is, and what I've seen that's most helpful, is if people can spend time with mentors, you know, spend time with the unschooling kids who are in their teen years and in their early 20s, spend time with families who are older than yours. It's really easy to be like, oh, I'm going to the park with the 2-year-old and the 3-year-old and all that little pod of kids. But really for parents, it's good to have that multi-age, multi-generational mentoring and mentorship as equally for the parents to be able to go, wow, look at how she's interacting with her teen. How did she get that kind of level of trust and respect? What was it she did? And you get to ask. And meanwhile, the kids, you know, the 8-year-old, 9-year-old see these teenagers who, when it's like, hey, it's time to leave the park, all those kids pick up stuff and help their moms out. And they're like, mom, do you need any help with that? And they are seeing life models of what you can be, which I think makes it a lot easier to trust when you're like, oh, it worked for them. Okay.
Yeah. Which was why I think the fact that you said you had one, a teenager in college, is that right? Or taking college level classes. I feel like that in and of itself is a story that would encourage anyone who's skeptical. So I was wondering if you could speak on that a little bit too, about what that journey was like, you know, getting your teen to get to that place. How did that come about?
So with our part of the sustainability movement and also juggling festivals, they're almost always tied to colleges, oddly enough. So when the kids were little and we'd go to juggling festivals or sustainability festivals or even music festivals that were cheap and free, they were at colleges, college campuses, out on the quads. So my kids from a very early age, like from before they were born, because that's what we did before they were born, spent a lot of time on different college campuses. And while we were on college campuses, you know, they'd have to go to the bathroom. So I'd walk them to the library to use their bathroom, and we'd go through the stacks and they would see kids studying. And I'd talk to them about, oh, well, they're maybe studying this. Or we would go by the theater department and use that bathroom, and they'd see what a college theater looked like. And so my kids from birth on were on college campuses and saw it as a super fun thing because they were juggling and they were listening to music.
My goodness, what a different perspective that your child got about college. I feel like most children do not see college as that at all.
Well, because I think most kids are growing up with the idea of, you have to learn this, you have to do this, you have to do that, and that's how you get to college. Whereas we weren't telling our kids, you have to go to college at all. We were telling them, you need to be fiscally responsible, you need to be self-sustained, you need to make sure that you can balance your budget. And that's always also been something that my kids have done from the time they were really young, is, you know, when they get money, they sort it out to retirement and this and that. And so they have those practical experiences, and we didn't actually care if they went to college. But for my kids, college was looking like a blast. And so by the time my oldest was 14, she's like, I want to start community college. I'm like, awesome, great. And once she got in her experience there, teachers adored her.
I mean, yeah, I just feel like right there, I have like an explosion of questions. I mean, I guess my main question is, how did she even do that? Like, how was she even ready? I mean, I hate to say this question, but I know it's on most listeners' minds, is how was she ready to do that? How was she ready to skip over the entire process of classroom learning and then jump into, at 14, a college level class? How did she do that?
Well, first of all, I would kind of reframe it in, she didn't skip over anything. She'd been learning her entire 14 years.
Right.
And one of the things she learned was not to be afraid to talk to adults, not to be afraid to ask questions. She learned how to write emails. So before she started, and I didn't like throw her into, you know, advanced biology either. You know, she took, her first class was a media arts class and a theater class were her first two classes. And so before the classes even started, she emailed the teachers and was like, hi, I'm going to be your student. I'm probably going to be the youngest one, and kind of reached out to them and connected with them. And that's more her style. I'll admit, we had some learning experiences that first semester, which actually caused her to create we had some learning experiences in that, like, the first thing was, and she was extremely responsible, all my kids have been, so when I brought her to the campus to take her assessment test, back then you had to have an assessment, I dropped her off and they said that the assessment would be 2 hours, so I said I would come back, and so I dropped her off, I left the campus, and about 40 minutes later I had a call on my cell phone from a number I didn't recognize, but I answered it, and it was my daughter. She borrowed someone's cell phone and was like, well, I'm out of the test. I was like, I thought it was supposed to take 2 hours. And she said, well, it didn't take me 2 hours. And she said, and I don't have a cell phone yet. I need a cell phone. No. Okay, yes, you do. And I figured if you're mature enough to start college, you're mature enough to handle a cell phone. But we had some weird things, like she went to take a test. They told her she needed a number 2 pencil. She didn't know what one was.
Oh my gosh,
the Scantron issue was like, she came out one day and she's like, I'm gonna fail college, it's horrible, and she was crying, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what's wrong? So what's a Scantron? And I'm like, oh, so there were holes for her college experience.
Yeah.
That came
but they
up.
They were easy holes to fill, I'm sure.
I never thought about. There were holes, like the first time she said, okay, I have to write a 5-page paper. My kid had never written a 5-page, you know, expository paper in her life. So, and I remember this very vividly, we were going over to the neighbor's house to sit in their hot tub and watch a TV show. And I'm in my bathrobe, in my bathing suit, and she says, I have to write a paper. And I'm like, okay, but I don't know how. So I say, okay, so get me a piece of paper. And in 15 minutes, I showed her how to do an outline and explained what Roman numerals were and how you write a capital I, and then the next one's a capital A, and then the supporting things. And I wrote in 15 minutes, I taught her how to do an outline because she was motivated. She had to write this paper, and then she wrote the paper.
Oh my goodness. And you know what? I try to tell people this, and this is like when people try to potty train babies, or they try to get their 2-year-old to read. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you could get the same skill set taught to your child in 10 minutes, or I mean, with potty training or reading, not 10 minutes, but you know, you can teach a skill in a shorter amount of time if you just wait until they're ready. You can do it in less time, less stress. It's like, you can spend 5 years trying to teach a child how to do an outline and write an essay, or you can take 15 minutes when they're ready and they're willing, and it's done. And it's like, which was the more effective education, the one that took 5 years to teach the outline or the one that took 15 minutes? If you're turning out the same result, I mean, I would have to say the 15-minute method way is, but it must take so much confidence to be willing to wait. You know, it must take so much like audacity really to say, I'm going to wait until my child's ready. Because I guess the worry is you think, maybe what if they're never ready? What if they never ask? What if they never?
You know what? My computer actually just shut down for a minute and I logged back in. I missed what you said, but I'm sure it was wonderful. Did you ask me a question?
I was just saying that I think that's such an effective way that you were able to teach for that in 15 minutes. Yeah. People
don't have that kind of respect. And just recently, I heard you mention the potty training thing. I have a friend who has a 18-month-old and she's starting to potty train. So she asked me, what did you do? And I said, well, because the daughter was starting to potty train and now she's regressed and the mom's upset. And I'm like, oh, I would do naked time outside with a little porta potty and just, you know, take a step back. It's okay. How many, you know, developmentally appropriate age level 18-year-olds, you know, who aren't potty trained? It will happen.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, I think people just, they know that these things have happened in their life. They know that they have taught their children to say words. Mm-hmm. They've taught their children to use the potty. They've taught their kids things that a curriculum didn't provide them with, that there wasn't really like a parenting manual for. And yet it happened. But somehow when we try to translate that same philosophy to school, it becomes, I don't know what becomes so tricky about it, but I just think your example of your teenager taking a college level class and doing an outline and an essay, it's just amazing to see that the fruits of that, that your trust in your child that actually yielded that result of,
and
which I think is
and my oldest, she did really well. My second, my next kid did really, really well too. My third one, the one that really kind of has a more traditional, she's the one that wanted more structure and more traditional. When she started college at 14, she had a lot of self-doubts about it, whether or not she would do okay. And because I listened to her and we talked about it, I'm like, do you want a tutor? And she said, yes. So I reached out to an unschooler young adult I knew, because I knew that young adult would understand our philosophy. And I'm like, can you work with her? And she's all, well, what subject she's taking? And it really didn't matter. I'm like, it doesn't matter, but just guide her and kind of just be that support for her confidence. And so we did that. And that 14-year-old is now almost 17, going into her fourth year. And she actually has a 4.0. The other two, one has gotten a B and the other one has gotten two Bs. But
I mean, I'm just blown away. So she's basically gonna have her bachelor's degree when she's 18.
She could. She's going a bit slower because of her confidence is such that she's like, I don't, you know, she's not, she is approaching it slower, which is important to her. And I gotta honor that. I mean, there isn't a rush. Especially right now, my oldest, she rushed and she was ready and she went away. And right now with the COVID situation, everything's going online and she was supposed to go study abroad this summer and for the fall and they've been canceled. And she's like, I'm just gonna take the year off, which she's a year ahead. So, or a year ahead of her peers, which none of it really matters anyways, but she's like, this is baloney. I don't want to do this. I'm like, I get it. So she's going to take next year off. And
so she has that support from you because you really do trust that her path is already laid out. And I feel like that is so valuable. There's no price and there's no way to teach that relationship into happening. It's something that really, I guess, develops over time. It's a philosophy that hits you and convicts you. And I just think the way that it covers so many different areas of your life is just, it's so beautiful. And, you know, I know we're running out of time at this episode. This episode went way further than I thought we would. But, you know, I just think that I'm so happy that our paths crossed and that we were able to have this conversation, because I still have so many more questions for you. I think that what we'll do is, I know you said that you were going to be able to help me with speaking on the topic of marriage.
Yeah.
So maybe in our next episode, we can continue to talk about how homeschooling, you know, affects marriage and what that looks like, that journey through homeschooling while trying to also balance a marriage. Mm-hmm. That would be so fun if we could talk about that on another episode.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Also, I don't know if anybody writes into you with questions, because I kind of feel like I covered a whole big bunch of things. You know, our world schooling approach versus games.
Yes, we do. We get a lot of questions.
So let me know. I mean, I don't feel like I'm an expert at all. I still look to my mentors whenever I have questions. And I think that's important. So if I can be a mentor for somebody with toddlers, because I really think it starts then, with that potty training, you know, do you trust the 3-year-old to go potty when they're ready? It translates to, do you trust the 21-year-old to take a break from college?
Right, you know? Right. And that's something that I think would your, I guess your main advice then, as we start to close out, your main advice would be mentorship then, right?
I think so. For unschooling specifically, well, probably all homeschooling, but unschooling, mentorship is so important. I do.
Yeah. Yeah. So then I guess what I'll do is in my show notes, I'll put some resources for all the listeners so that if they do need that mentorship or they need a place to go to get connected, then we can help them get connected with some other unschoolers and just help people feel that support in their approach.
For sure. Yeah. And even if they aren't unschoolers and are Charlotte Manson or whatever, find a mentor. Like, it just makes
sense. Regardless.
Regardless. Mentors are wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this was so much fun, and I'm so sorry that this episode took way longer than I thought, but I think it was really beautiful content, and I hope it really helps someone who's listening and wanting to learn more about unschooling. And I guess until next time, I'm going to reach out to you and we'll disconnect here.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Kate. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye, Ashley.
Bye.